Underwriting support for Hometown Sunday Morning from the Sharon Valley Tavern since the 1930s, serving the community with a rich history and roots dating back to the 1800s. Today, the tavern continues to serve the residents of the tri-state region with a relaxing atmosphere 7 days a week, food, friends, and fun the old-fashioned way, 860-364-9355. You'll find them on Facebook, Sharon Valley Tavern. Associated Lightning Rod, Route 22 in Millerton, installing lightning protection for homes and businesses for well over 50 years, 518-789-4603. ALRCI.com on the web. Sagala Turnkey Housing, Route 7 in Canaan, an authorized independent builder for Westchester Modular Homes, 860-824-0019, Sagala's.com. Roaring Oaks Florist in Lakeville, Connecticut, unique designs with personal attention, roaringoaksflorist.com. Dave's TV, Route 44 in Millerton, New York, everything for home entertainment, video, audio, satellite TV, 518-789-3881, davestv.net. McEnroe Organic Farm Market, Route 22 in Millerton, open year-round 7 days a week, 518-789-4191, McEnroeOrganicFarm.com. Northeast Muffler, Route 22 in Millerton, New York, 518-789-3669. On Facebook, Northeast Muffler. Upcountry Services in Sharon, serving the northwest corner and neighboring Dutchess County for over 30 years, 800-791-2916, upcountryservices.com. McKenney's Auto Sales, Route 7 in Sheffield. They've been selling top-quality used vehicles for 42 years, standing behind what they sell. Scott, Mike, Greg, Art, and the crew guarantee the service you deserve and not pushy sales pitches, serving multiple generations with integrity and respect for 42 years. McKetty's is the place to go. 413-528-5410. Online, McKetty'sAutoSales.net.
Listeners, it is Sunday, March 25th, and it's just 2 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. You're listening to Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio and robinhoodradio.com. I don't have any PSAs for you, but I will just quickly mention that at the Canaan VFW on the 31st, two guys in suits and ties will be having a concert that's going to start at 7 p.m. All proceeds will go towards the building fund of the Canaan VFW post itself. I don't have an admission cost for you just yet, but I will before the end of the show. So let's take a quick look at the weather. It's generally cloudy today. A few flurries are possible, a high of 41. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, a low of 24. Tomorrow, a mainly sunny sky, a high of 46. For Robin Hood Radio, I'm Chad Wildy.
Larry the Patriot.
I'm NASCAR Dave. Farmer Paul. He said he was on his way in. He must have overslept today.
He's out trimming trees.
I don't understand what his issue is. That's really unfortunate.
He's got more issues
than
Sports Illustrated.
He's got a lot of work to do around the
house. Wow. We're going to have to get to the bottom of this for sure.
I saw him out there. He was diligently sawing trees. And
well, anyway, welcome to this edition of Hometown Sunday Morning. And seeing how there is no PSAs, I can tell you that the second week in April, I think on Saturday, let me just look that up quick. I see on the billboard down here, Legion Post 126. That would be on the 8th, I believe.
Roast beef.
They are going to have their roast beef dinner. Or no, that would be on the 7th. I'm sorry. Saturday is the 7th. Yeah, that's a little bit better, isn't it, Larry? You don't want to go to a roast beef dinner on Sunday when it's Saturday.
We know you're discombobulated in the morning.
Anyway, it's $14 all you can eat. Includes mashed potatoes, green beans. I believe they have tossed salad with this one, but great meal put out by American Legion Post 126. It's eat in or take out, and tickets are available at the door. If you need any information on that, it's 860-364-5640. So with that being said, we might as well kick it right off and have Larry start with his weekly troop tribute. So we'll hand it off to him.
Okay, good morning, hometown listeners. Today we'll recognize military pioneer women who, throughout American history, have been quick to put on a uniform in defense of our nation. This from an article in the Veterans of Foreign War magazine by Joni Diehouse. There's a portrait on the cover story of this article depicting a lady warrior. More on that in just a bit. Women have helped defend U.S. soil since the birth of our nation. There was even a time they went so far as to don men's clothing to serve their country, long before they were allowed to vote. During the Revolutionary War, the Continental Army and colonial militias did not allow women to enlist. Women served as cooks, laundresses, seamstresses, and nurses while accompanying men on campaigns. Throughout the war, more than 20,000 women provided support, sustenance, or active service for the military. Now, more on that that portrait on the front cover of this. It depicts Mary Hayes McCauley, also known as Sergeant Molly or Molly Pitcher, who was one of the 400 women who helped the Continental Army at Valley Forge during the Revolutionary War. She later took drinking water to artillerymen during the Battle of Monmouth Courthouse in Freehold, New Jersey, on June 28, 1778. After her husband William was wounded, Hayes stepped forward and took the rammer staff from her wounded husband's hands. For the second time on an American battlefield, a woman manned a gun. The first was Margaret Corbin during the defense of Fort Washington in 1776. Hayes stayed at her post acting as a matress or gunner assistant. Another such woman was Deborah Sampson. In May 1782, Sampson took the name Robert Shirtlip and impersonated a man while serving in the light infantry company of the 4th Massachusetts Regiment. She was wounded on July 3, 1782, just outside Tarrytown, New York, when she was hit with a musket ball in her thigh and also suffered a gash to the forehead. It was not until October 25, 1783, that Sampson's true identity was discovered after she contracted a brain freeze fever. She was then discharged from the Army. Sampson died in 1827 at the age of 66 and is buried in Rock Ridge Cemetery in Sharon, Massachusetts. Another woman, Sally St. Clair, masqueraded as a man so she could follow her lover to war. The young Creole woman was killed on October 9, 1779, in the Second Battle of Savannah, and only then was her gender revealed. Women distinguished themselves as men in order to serve in combat. Continued during the War of 1812, when a Massachusetts woman named Lucy Brewer enlisted in the Marines under the name George Baker. Though there is some doubt about the story's validity, the Marine Corps Historical Division concludes that Brewer is a legendary first woman Marine. According to legend, Brewer served aboard the USS Constitution during the August 19, 1812 battle with the British ship Guerriere. Women served primarily as nurses for the wounded. In 1861, Dorothea Dix organized the first women's nurse corps, which numbered 3,214 nurses, assigned mainly to large hospitals in major cities. Another 18,000 women were paid Army volunteers. They helped collect and treat wounded immediately following battles. Some 2,000 more were unpaid volunteers. Getting her start as a Civil War nurse, though no part of Dix's nurse corps, Clara Barton later founded the American Red Cross on May 21, 1881. Dubbed the Angel of the Battlefield, she tended to Union wounded on the battlefield, including those at Antietam and Fredericksburg. In June 1864, she was appointed Superintendent of Nurses for the Army of the James in Virginia. Later, President Abraham Lincoln made Barton Superintendent of the first missing soldier's office, where she traced the fates of some 30,000 missing men. After the wars, she marked the graves of Union soldiers buried at the prison in Andersonville, Georgia. Barton remained head of the Red Cross until she retired in 1904. She died of pneumonia on April 12, 1912. Without the service and sacrifices of women throughout the history of our country, female service members likely would not be where they are today. Conclusion. Women have and continue to proudly and honorably serve in our military. Some have gone on to publicly serve their country after the military retirement. Four of these women who served in combat and are today serving in Congress are Senator Joni Ernst, Republican from Iowa. She was in the U.S. Army Reserves and served in Kuwait and Iraq. Senator Tammy Duckworth, Democrat, served in Iraq as a co-chopper pilot. And unfortunately, that chopper she was in one day was hit by an RPG and she lost both of her legs, but she proudly serves her country still today. The third is Republican Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, Democrat from Hawaii, Army National Guard, served in Iraq and Kuwait. And the fourth is Republican Congresswoman Martha McSally, Republican, Arizona, Air Force retired Lieutenant Colonel. She was a squadron commander. She flew VA-10 Thunderbolt jets in Iraq and Afghanistan. That was an awesome weapon. And it's close ground support, and the troops on the ground sure love to see that baby come overhead. Women are superb naturals in many military ratings, although I will never agree to them serving in frontline combat infantry units. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but it's obvious standards are adjusted compensate for women in combat infantry units. This can prove dangerous to themselves and those who serve with them. And that's it for today, folks. God bless our military, our veterans, those serving us foreign and domestically, and especially you faithful listeners and your families. Back to NASCAR Day.
That was good. Now, Paul, welcome.
Why, thank you.
Do you want to
explain? Oh, Paul's here.
Do you want to tell us about the article in the New York Post today?
You just handed it to me. I didn't read it.
You haven't read it?
No.
Well, you're a speed reader, so you should be able to highlight it. It's regarding service dogs.
Service dogs that were casualties of war. I really haven't read it, and I have trouble reading in this room.
Well, anyway,
the word glasses. You read it though, didn't you?
I read parts of it. It's about service dogs that were abandoned after the handlers came home from Iraq and Afghanistan, and eventually the dogs ended back up in the United States to be put up for adoption. And the way the law reads, the handlers are supposed to have first dibs on adopting the dogs that they were with over in Afghanistan and Iraq. However, that's not the case. When one gentleman went to look for his dog, it had already been adopted out to a private family, and they refused to give the dog up once it was located. And in other cases, two guys came in and bought dogs for they bought 40 or 50 dogs,
yeah,
100 dogs for $13,000 each, and they were going to sell them to another country for double that amount of money per dog.
She said it'd be Saudi Arabia.
No, it's not. It's Panama.
Panama. Wow. So, to make a long story short, it's unfortunate that this is happening to these service dogs, because they're probably not. They probably have a form of PTSD in an animal, much like the humans do. And I'm not so sure they should be around families and little kids.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They're not. That's not what they're trained to do. And certainly the best solution would be to get them back with their handlers, if the handlers certainly wanted them.
That article is somewhat outdated, because initially, right after Iraqi freedom, the invasion of Iraqi freedom and so forth, the handlers had no choice other than to abandon the animals. And that's it.
That's it, yeah.
If they're up for grabs, whatever happened to them, probably many.
But they were trained where? Here in the United States, weren't they?
They were trained by United States military, yes. But you couldn't bring them home with you.
Why?
But
well, why couldn't they come home at all?
International
BS
and everything else.
You talked about the donkey less.
There's a much more cooperative situation involved, and almost all of them can be reunited by their handlers at the present day.
I see.
So we need to call the New York Post and tell them they don't know what they're printing.
Well,
in
I mean, I'm sure it was true.
It's not updated
when this was. It's a result of a book, isn't it, a study of some type.
I guess I should have never brought this up today.
Well, there's no argument.
There is an argument. The paper's saying one thing, Larry's saying another thing, and you're just sitting there like.
I haven't read the article,
so I don't know.
Post.
Oh, I love the New York Post, Larry.
I love the New York Post too. There are some beautiful pictures in here.
Well, anyway, with that being said, we always start out with a troop tribute, and while we're playing a couple songs, I'll read the article.
All right.
And then I'll read it out loud to everyone, and they can make their own decision, okay? How's that sound? Then everybody can draw their own conclusion.
You don't have to go that far.
I'm going to go that far. So we're going to start out with a couple of tribute songs right now, and this goes out to all those service guys and gals.
See how you...
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for success, from my head down to my boots. I don't do it for the money, there's bills that I can't pay. I don't do it for the glory, I just do it anyway. Providing for our futures, my responsibility. Yeah, I'm real good under pressure, being all that I can be. I can't call in sick on Mondays when the weekend's been too strong. I just work straight through the holidays, sometimes all night long. You can bet that I stand ready when the wolf growls at the door. Hey, I'm solid, hey, I'm steady, hey, I'm true down to the core. And I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost, I know the sacrifice. Oh, and I don't wanna die for you, but if dying's asking me, with honor, 'cause freedom don't come free. I'm an American soldier, an American. Beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take a stand. When liberty's in jeopardy, I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines, sleep in peace tonight. American soldier, I'm an American soldier. I
jeopardy. I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front line to sleep in peace tonight. American soldier.
He sat in that long line of barber chairs, and the sergeant asked him, son, would you like to keep your hair? He said, yes, sir, as he heard those clippers buzz and hum. And the sergeant said, well, hold out your hand, 'cause here it comes. Simplify. Do or die. So gung ho to go and pay the price. Here's to leather necks, devil dogs and jar heads. Paris Island in July. Semper Fi. In my bed instead of a foxhole. I've never heard my boss tell me to lock and load. Ain't no bullet holes in the side of my SUV, because the kid next door just shipped out overseas. Semper Fi. Proud to be the first ones in the fight. Semper Fi.
Toby Keith and Trace Adkins helping us out with this week's troop tribute. You're listening to Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio and robinhoodradio.com. I'm Chad Wilde.
Larry the Patriot.
Belated, but
still alive.
No longer hungry, Farmer Paul.
I'm NASCAR Dave. Where'd you find that last song, Chad? That was good.
I don't know. I just wanted to play something different. So.
Something different.
And who was that by?
Trace Adkins.
Trace Adkins.
That was called Semper Fi.
That was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
So, as I read this article.
Yeah. It is sort of depressing.
These guys can't find their dogs.
Right, that's what it comes
down to. No matter how
many
reports everybody, the Defense Office. On March 1st, the Department of Defense Inspector General quietly released a 69-page report seemingly prompted by a 2016 New York Post expose about hundreds of military war dogs carelessly dumped out for civilian adoptions. To read news coverage of this report and the investigation launched by the House Armed Services Committee in 16, you would think the problem was fixed, that the wrongdoers had been held to account, and that this would never happen again. You would be wrong. In 2014, several unauthorized adoption events for recently discharged military working dogs were held on the grounds of K2 Solutions, a North Carolina-based Army subcontractor. In their wake, multiple Army veterans who had been handlers, who served alongside these dogs in Iraq and Afghanistan, talked to the Post about their attempts to locate their dogs. By law, the handlers are supposed to be the first in line to adopt the discharged dogs. The bonds these human and canine soldiers form in war are deep and profound. Many of these veterans called K2 Solutions directly. They were told over and over that no one could help them. How amazing, then, to read the DOD report and not see a single mention of K2 or its CEO, Lane Kellison, who told the Post that, yes, the company had adopted out these war dogs, most, having no business around small children, and they adopted them to civilians. K2, by the way, would often direct distressed veteran dog handlers to the Army's office of the Provost Marshal General. How amazing, then, to see no mention in the DOD report of Robert Squires or Richard Vargas, both then staffers of the OPMG, both of whom are seen at least one K2 adoption event, and both whom took dogs. It was Squires, a witness told the Post, who was heard saying all these dogs have PTSD. Leo Gonering was a Pentagon employee who took a military working dog, and when a dog's handler came to the Post, we called Gonering. A voicemail sent from his phone defiantly informed us he would not be giving the dog back. Also mentioned are Dean Henderson and Jamie Salas, two men known to Vargas who rolled up and took 13 dogs. In fact, they later told a kennel master that they purchased the dogs for $13,000 each and planned to sell them to the Panamanian government for double that. Such an act would be illegal, if not treasonous. Those dogs are considered war equipment by the Army, each having 75 to 100,000 worth of training. Henderson and Salas eventually abandoned them. Kennel master Greg Meredith told the Post that he was instructed by Henderson to destroy the dogs. But no, only cited here is Henderson and Salas' deeply dubious firm, Solidin, which seemed to consist of a website and little else. Nowhere in the report is any investigation into black market or sales to foreign governments or what consequences those who masterminded such a grand and grievous deception should face. Among the fixes the DOD touts is a streamlined system of tracking these dogs and their handlers. But again, as the Post revealed in 16, the Army kept records of each dog, ID'd by name and tattooed serial number, and their matching handlers. Such protocol isn't and has never been the issue, but it sounds nice on the nightly news. Meanwhile, heartbroken veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan are still searching for their long-lost dogs, while those responsible aren't even publicly shamed, let alone fined or prosecuted. The DOD's final report on the matter will be published Friday. There's still time to call or write every member of the House Armed Services Committee and demand more. So it sounds to me like these guys still aren't getting their dogs.
There's red flags all over on that report. First of all, this is going back 4 years, according to him.
Yeah, and 16 and 14.
These dogs he's referring to are in North Carolina. Now, it takes an act of God to move a dog from Afghanistan or Iraq to the United States. So how are all these dogs all of a sudden accumulated in North Carolina?
It doesn't say how they got there.
I assume.
You have to go through the international ASPCA for each and individual one. You have to go through each country involved in transporting these dogs. And all of a sudden, they all wind up in North Carolina.
Well, if the army trained all these dogs, they've got to be like this thing says here. It's the dogs are considered war. They're considered war equipment by the army.
I imagine they may have.
They would be just like a tank or a jeep or a machine gun.
They put out a bid to a company to remove all these dogs.
He may be referring to attack dogs or offensive dogs or something that are trained. These are not, I will guarantee you, they're not dogs that served in Iraq and Afghanistan all of a sudden appear in mass in North Carolina. That's BS.
That's not what this article is saying.
Not what it says, though.
Yeah, it's implied.
Yes, he did. That's what
are appearing in North Carolina, but it's not implying that.
It said they adopted
war dogs, right?
They were in North Carolina.
Yes.
Yeah, the K2 Solutions is a North Carolina-based Army subcontractor.
He's saying that these people saw
and
these
dogs
in North Carolina.
And the dogs had served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
That's what it says, It says these dogs were in Iraq and Afghanistan.
That's nonsense.
Well, it may not be nonsense. It may be something a little worse than that.
It may be news sensationalism, perhaps.
Could be. I don't know. It's in the New York Post, anyway, on page 21.
Try to get a human out of Iraq or Afghanistan. A dog is even worse.
Well, we'll have to...
I don't know.